We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School podcast, coming at you on a Wednesday, a game day for the New York Knicks. Game two, of course, is tonight. Knicks-Hawks, 7:30 at Madison Square Garden. To fully prepare you and immerse you in all of the Knicks-Hawks thoughts and analysis, Mike Vorkunov of The Athletic joined us today. We had a great conversation, finished it a little while ago. He was excellent, as always. So you're going to enjoy that. We also have some news. We'll get through the lesser news first. Nerlens Noel, questionable for game two. There were some coin flips that happened at the NBA offices to determine some draft picks. Knicks got very lucky. They got the 19th and 21st picks in the draft. 19th, their pick, 21st, the Dallas pick. There were six different scenarios. That scenario was the best of the six. So a very good day for the Knicks where the draft is concerned. But of course, I am bearing the lead here. So full disclosure, I recorded this intro a little while ago. And then news just came down a few minutes ago that Julius Randle has won the NBA's Most Improved Player Award. We've talked about him all year. I know he didn't have a great game one. He has been as instrumental in turning around this franchise as anybody. Leon Rose, Tom Thibodeau, anybody, a testament to him, his work ethic, his commitment to this team, this program, to Tibbs, the whole thing. Andrew, I see you in the shadows, the producer's shadows. Do you have anything to add to this conversation right now? Oh my. Oh my. Oh boy. What a fascinating song choice for this occasion. Wow.
That's all I got. Congrats, Julius.
If you've been listening to the pod, you know what that means. I'm not gonna speak to it anymore. I do. Hold on. Before I go, can I just really quickly, because I feel like the NBA's Most Improved Player Award has this reputation of, like, I don't know, almost like a lesser award or something. I'm just gonna read off the names of, like, the people who have won it over the last 10 years in reverse order. Brandon Ingram, Pascal Siakam, Victor Oladipo, Giannis Antetokounmpo, CJ McCollum, that's my daughter, she's very excited, Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, Jimmy Butler, Goran Dragic, Paul George, Ryan Anderson's the one that's not so great, and Kevin Love. Really not a bad group. And he now joins this esteemed list because he's really good, and he's going to make an All-NBA team, and he's going to get MVP votes. And just kudos to you, Julius Randle. And kudos to you, Andrew Claudio. And kudos to everybody out there. I can't. Let's get to my conversation with Mike Vorkuno. Joining us now on the Knicks Film School podcast, making his triumphant return after getting through the initial gauntlet of having a new child in the house. We also wish him our heartfelt congratulations here from KFS. Is it, are you past 6 weeks? Is it still the first 6 weeks? It's like 4 weeks.
Today, right? Is 2 months. Today is 2 months, actually.
Holy shit, time. So, that means,
yeah.
Is mine 3 months then?
I can't answer for that.
I don't know.
That's between you and your wife and God.
That is between all of us. Mike Vorkunov, of The Athletic, of course, now really is getting close to kind of John Goodman, Tom Hanks territory on KFS podcast here. I think it's got to be 5 or 6, maybe more appearances.
I just come on whenever you're desperate. I never say no. We got no one else. Everyone good said no to me. I think this time you're like, I've run out of guests. I did the 5 good ones last week. Mike, you want to come on?
You really sunk. I mean, when you know, the quality of your writing has just gone down so much. If I'm being honest,
I agree.
Here's what I read as I was reading your was it a shattered postmortem, the one that came out today? What would you call that piece that came out today?
Yeah, I guess maybe like an optimistic view of what the future is.
It wasn't that one. It was your day after analysis of game one of Hawks Knicks. And I'm reading it. I'm like, wow, it's great when I'm reading something and it makes me realize not only am I not as good a writer as this person, but I'm not as good a basketball analyst as this person. So thank you.
I don't know
thank
about
you,
that one.
No. Thank you, Mike. I really appreciate the pick me up.
Yeah, I read the newsletter every morning. I see how much work you put into it and how good it is. I cannot and do not try to do that.
Well, you're very kind. I'm going to open. We're going to get to some of the specifics that you talked about in your writing over the last few days. But as myself and Andrew were just bantering before you came on, I want to open with this. Who do you think is the better team in this series between the Knicks and the Hawks? Because I don't know the answer to that question.
You know, my whole analysis coming into this game, and it hasn't changed after one game, is that I thought the Knicks had the better coach and the better player, the best player, I mean, and the Hawks were better from there on out. And game one kind of inverted all of that, right? Like Julius Randle had, you know, maybe his worst game of the year. Yeah. Trae Young was great, obviously. And then, you know, Alec Burks comes up huge, Derrick Rose, like Taj Gibson. Taj Gibson, I was like, some of the stuff he was doing in the fourth quarter there was crazy. Just like someone watching basketball and remembering Taj Gibson is like 35 and doing this. It's crazy. But now, you know, I think probably the Hawks are the better team, especially if Julius Randle is not going to be able to be peak Julius Randle. I don't think Alec Burks is going to go for 9 of 13, 27 points every game. Like,
that would be nice.
I give the advantage to the Hawks. A lot of this is, you know, weighing on how they play Julius Randle. And my whole thing with the Knicks, and I was crossover name drop, your friend Chris, we were doing the clubhouse last week or whatever, and I said, look, the doomsday scenario for the Knicks is if Julius Randle starts missing all those really tough shots, all those shots and jumpers that he made all season long. That's got a high degree of difficulty that he hit consistently throughout the year, but still are really fucking hard shots.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes that just stops, and over a short period of time, like, you just go cold, right? Like, that just happens over the course of any season. Sometimes that cold spell aligns with the playoffs. So I'm not saying game one was like the start of that, but this stuff happens over the course of a year, especially when you're being specifically schemed against, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think the Hawks are probably the better team, the more well-rounded team, and really, like, game two and going forward is a lot of it's gonna be on Tibbs. It's gonna be on he's got to make some adjustments that I think the Hawks took advantage of in game one.
You just hit on literally everything that I want to talk to you about in the outline for today. So I'll just pick one because it's the last thing you brought up, Tibbs. So I'm gonna quote you. You wrote yesterday, I believe it was, that the Knicks have struggled all season long on out of bounds plays. They ranked last. There's no place below last among teams in points per possession on baseline out of bounds plays. I did not realize that before reading it from you. And then 27 on slob plays. I prefer that acronym. Some people, I think, paid more attention to the last 0.9 seconds than others. To me, I just can't get past the giving up 22 points in 5 minutes at home when you're the fourth ranked defense. But just on Tibbs, do you think he got severely outcoached in this game, or do you think it was just like there were a few adjustments to be made and he didn't do the best job making them?
I don't think he got severely outcoached. I think game one is also kind of like a feeling out game, right? Like, you're trying to see how your personnel fits against each other. Like, the first three games between these teams, we're not really an indicator of how each team looks. Like, the Hawks starting lineup played 1 minute together against the Knicks all season, right? Like, it just wasn't there. Actually, no minutes. Never mind.
You said it. 15 all year, right?
Yeah, like 15 all, okay. Something like that. Yeah. And so they were trying to feel each other out. The only thing that I questioned about Tom Thibodeau in the first game was why he didn't try to make any adjustments in the pick and roll coverage. And I think he tried to do it late on that final play where Trey just like burned down the house to hit the game winner. And that was just wizardry. I see that as more wizardry than bad defense.
Yeah.
But it looked like they were just playing drop coverage all game. And Trey took, I had it in my game one rewind, but he hit, you know, like he had like 12 mid-range jumpers or something like that. Like, they just gave that to him and they said, okay, we'll give that up instead of the lob to Capella. And that's a tough spot, right? Like, pick your poison, but he kept hurting them there. And that's what I'm really curious to see going forward is how he improves there and whether they can find some space for Julius Randle to work with offensively. You know, those are the two Tibbs things.
So
aside from the obvious, which I'm sure we'll get to at some point, and you're burning inside your heart with rage.
No, it's, I don't even know how to talk about it anymore. It's like when you've been through, like, I don't know, how does marriage counseling work? I'm assuming you go through like different trials of marriage counseling and you try to make it work at home and then you go back. I've never been to marriage counseling, thankfully. But like, whatever, I'm at the end. I'm at the point, like, just get, hire a lawyer. Let's get this done. We'll talk about him in a second. On
your
the
lawyer, we'll talk about your lawyer.
We'll talk. Yes. Thank you.
By the way, I just looked up in my own story. The Knicks gave up 12 shots to Trae Young from 14 feet and in. So, like, free throw line and in.
Did he make 8 or 9?
He made 7.
Oh, okay. So,
and he was 1 of 6 from long mid range. So they were giving up that shot. Content.
And there were a couple. I'm curious how the stat people did that, because there were a couple where it felt like the floater released his hand from, like, on the free throw line. Does that go down as long mid range? Does that go down as short? Whatever. But it's interesting because you just bring up those numbers and 7 for 12 plus 1 for 6. Okay. So that's quick math, 8 for 18, right?
Yeah.
Which between the short and the long mid range, you sign for that every time with Trae Young, right? If there was no such thing as putting him on the line.
Right.
Unfortunately, there is, and it reared its ugly head in game one, and especially when you factor in that here's the thing of it for me. And again, I don't have an answer for this, and you're smarter than me, so that's why I'm going to ask you. If there's two parts of the math equation, there's the avoiding him or preventing him from taking threes, which they mostly did because he only took three and hit one, and then there's the Capella part of it. So it's like you're giving up by defending him in this way, you're giving up one of three possible options. And then there's like that side caveat of, oh, but wait a minute, if he misses a floater, there's also Capella there for the offensive rebound. Although the way they play the drop coverage, you'd think that they could prevent that too, but not really, because we saw Capella get 4 offensive rebounds in this game. So I just, with their personnel, I don't know what the answer is. And I'm not the coach of the Knicks, so it's not my job, but like, do you have something that you would, other than, I guess, try Frank more, or what do you think?
I don't think it's like one guy. Like, I think even if you put Frank Ntilikina at the point of attack, like, he's not going to be able to shut it down.
As right? We saw.
I saw the few plays when I went back and I looked at, you know, at a bunch of the plays, and the thing that worked was like, you know, they sometimes would come with a late double or help from one of the wing defenders. Yes. Obviously that's tricky too, because Trae Young is also a good, really good passer. So if he, you know, kicks out to the wing or to the corner, if that's where you're helping, you have to, you know, as Tom Thibodeau loves to say, you got to get to the paint and you got to hustle your ass back, basically. Multiple efforts. So that's really hard to do too, right? But that might be something they try if they don't want to meet, Trae Young at the point of attack on the pick and roll. That's also dangerous, because then you're asking for weak side rotations underneath. And there was a few plays where like Manuel quickly got caught as the guy rotating to hit Clint Capella diving to the rim. And that went exactly as you thought it would go. Emmanuel quickly had to stop Clint Capella from dunking. Right. So those are the very hard choices that a coach has. So we'll see if they either just switch coverages altogether and can consistently go with that throughout game two. If they just have a plan to switch throughout the game to try to confuse them. You know, I think on that game winner, they actually tried to, I don't know if they tried to like hit him at the point of attack or just blitz him all together on the pick and roll, but they tried something different, right? Like, that's why that play was so amazing, was that he got out of the double team, like, from 30 feet out. So I don't know. I'm not a coach. I'm obviously not good at this either, but those are like just logically thinking, like, you have to try something different, because letting him get to 12 feet and then deciding, do I go with the floater here? Do I just see if like Capella is open for the lob? If the big plays up a little bit, is a bad place to be in.
Well, that's actually a good transition to, we might as well talk about it now before we get to Randall, the starting lineup. So we're releasing this on Tuesday. So we're releasing this on Wednesday. So when we release it, we won't know yet. Gun to your head right now. You think he makes the switch?
I think not yet. I think he tries this very delicate balancing act that he does that it has not been working.
You called him out on it, and you're not wrong.
I mean, it's just, you know, it wasn't working in the regular season. They kept winning. It just wasn't working, though. Like, I think the fact that they won was not an indication of, you know, success, proof of concept there. My guess he's doing is because, like, he can't play Derrick Rose 40 minutes a night. And so you have to almost have Elfrid Payton be an innings eater type of guy. But if that's what you're doing, I'd rather get more Rose Randall minutes together and have Payton eat those minutes up, you know, later on against the reserves, if you can do your rotations that way, than having Derrick Rose play 20 straight minutes in the first half, which was...
I get what you lose by putting Alec Burks in the starting five, because then Alec Burks isn't there to help support your bench. But I just, if you're going to play Rose 35 to 38 minutes anyway, and we know Burks has shown the ability to play 30 minutes, we know Quickly has shown the ability to play 30 minutes, like, that's a lot of, and to say nothing of RJ Barrett, who can handle a play, you know, at the point of attack or, you know, leading the offense for a possession or two. Like, it's not like they don't have other options. They have guys who can initiate offense. I almost think with him, it's like a safety first thing, where it's like, this makes him feel most comfortable, where he gets to have everything else as he likes it. And again, who the hell am I? Probably he's going to win coach of the year. But it's like, at some point, don't you have to jump off the ledge and be like, this is now too detrimental, where this person is clearly, I don't even know what, in his own head does not seem strong enough, but it's not good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not here to like question anyone's mental toughness, you know, especially players, like, but I think when Tom Thibodeau talks about, hey, we have to see how the groups work, how the lineups work together. The clear evidence is that the starting lineup is getting outscored every time for the last like 16 games or so, I think.
Yep.
And you know what, like, that's, shouldn't that be the primary group that you look at? And obviously the bench makes up for it, but I think that's just, I don't think you want to be in a spot every time where, you know, you're trying to catch up once you go to your bench. Like, that's dangerous too. If you're starting from negative and you're counting on someone to pick you up, like there will be days where Derrick Rose has bad games, right? Like we've seen that as well. I think it would be interesting if they tried Burks or even Quickly as the point guard. You know, Quickly gets other more one. Spacing. Yeah. Maybe that kind of gets some of the passing lanes to open up for Randle too, because they just can't play him as hard. You know, they can't overload him like Tom Thibodeau said to like against the passing lanes, against the jump shot, because you have to respect Quickly. You don't respect Alfred Payton, right? Like that's why you see him float down to the baseline so often. He's not just a guy who you can even spot up from 30. You know, you can spot Quickly up from 28 feet and really space the offense horizontally that way.
Yeah.
And create some more room that you can't do that with Elfrid Payton. So I'd be curious, like Burks would be good. It seemed like he wasn't getting completely thrown off by Trae Young defensively on the pick and roll, the few times he had to guard it. I would try any of those things. I think you just have to be imaginative. And I know like it might be uncomfortable or off your usual rotations, but like this is the playoffs. This is what
it's
you do.
It's the perfect word for it. And for as much as he... For as much as he makes his players uncomfortable at times, I think as part of his straight, like, I think it was you. I think it was your colleague who covered Tibbs for many years with Minnesota, John Krasinski, who said he like you have to embrace the discomfort. I don't want to misquote him, but it was something to that effect. And it was a great line. But he doesn't like to get uncomfortable, which is, you know, interesting. But to your point about who guards who. Maybe even hide Burks on whether I guess Hunter maybe, and then you put pick one of Barrett and Bullock to go on Trey, and then put the other one on Bogey and see how that again. I guess, but maybe he hasn't felt like he's not in a position yet where it's like, oh, I have nothing to lose because he had more confidence coming into game. I don't know. We'll see. But you're right; it's on him. You mentioned Randle. You wrote extensively about Randle the other day. Great point, by the way, about the help guys being. And I did not notice that. They're all tall. He keeps bringing the help with tall guys with long arms that make it tough for him to see and survey the defense and the whole thing. Is this just as simple as Julius Randle needs to hit some shots? Or do you think it has more? No, I mean, do you think it's more?
No, I know. Because I've been thinking about it too. I was like, there's got to be like some schematic thing I'm not missing. But I screwed up. I'm just going to go with hit jumpers. I don't know. He shot 44% from the mid-range this season. He was 1-10 in game one, right? Yeah. Like, even you hit two of those, Knicks win, right? Like that's 109, 107. I think some of those shots you just have to hit, right? Like I know it sounds stupid, and again, I'm probably missing something. Like this is not my forte, but they need him to hit those jumpers. Like that's what he's been doing all season. That's why they've been good, is because he's been hitting those, you know, spin off the baseline jumpers, those contested twos, those pull up at the elbow like jumpers. Those are all the things that he's been doing. Yeah. That he missed in game one. And so you think, okay, we're going to get some regression to what's been the average for him and get some more points from him just like that, just by him being Julius Randle again. Not even playing like 37 points per game like he did against the Hawks, but just being a better version of himself.
Yeah. No, 100%. And let me ask you, I just thought of this as you're talking. Do you think, because you've been pretty on top of where he's at with this team and the decisions that they have coming up as far as his contract situation and other team building questions. Do you think he's done enough this season that this series, I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but like his path forward with this organization is already fairly certain? Or do you think, like, for instance, if he had a terrible series, do you think that might impact? I know I'm asking you to basically guess here, but like, do you have any opinion on how that might impact things going forward?
Usually Leon Rose is so open and, you know, you just have a conversation with him about this.
I'm sure. Are we missing? Let me check my email. Are we missing a Leon Rose press availability?
Have you tried to get Leon when you text them and you're like, you know, hey, Leon, do you want to come on this week? Or like, do we have to keep doing this off the record? Like, how do you do your sourcing with him?
We keep sending the email request, and I don't, Andrew, have we gotten a response on that one yet? I don't know. Andrew shaking his head. No. Okay. Have you, maybe you'll get luck next week. Bork. I don't know.
I doubt it. I don't know. To me, like, I think he'll be back next year. Like he deserves that much, but
well, yeah, obviously.
To me, like you don't want to say, I know Knicks fans, especially just so hyped about the way that Randle's played this year, but like, I'd want to see another season of what a shooting looks like. For a game like this, exactly. It's just like, can he continue to shoot 41% from three? Can he continue to shoot, you know, like 75th percentile from the mid range? Like, those are all very important things. If he can't hit those shots, he's not going to be the also that he was this year. And it sounds simplistic, but so much to me is predicated off that jumper working and creating so much for him and the Knicks that, like, if it's not repeatable, then it's not worth investing $160 million or whatever the extension is that you would give him in free agency in the summer of 22, right? Yeah. And that's also something he has to weigh if they give him that 4-year 106 max extension that they can this summer. Is like, hey, do I want to hedge against my own, drop back to closer to normalcy, right? Like, yeah. I think we've DM'd about it. It's like, how many guys have you seen who've made that kind of leap like he has mid-career, year seven, into All-Star? And the guys that have done it, you know, like Victor Oladipo, right? Like, that went sideways for him afterward. And
because he was never that good.
Yeah. And it's not even that he got hurt. The next year before he got hurt, he wasn't even that good again.
It was the numbers are speak for themselves. They were.
Yeah. And there are some other guys that you mentioned in a few of your newsletters. So to me, I'd want to see it done again. Like, there's, you know, I don't want to just bet on 1 year, especially a short year where maybe the sample size of shooting is not enough where you can just say forecast it for the future saying, okay, he is now a 41% three-point shooter, you know, or even a 39% three-point shooter, all those things.
Yeah, I wonder also how much is in conversation for the offseason, but how much, getting the other star that we always talk about impacts this, because bringing that player aboard can take less of the onus off of him and just allow him to be more of what he was in New Orleans, which was just a great finisher. And like, is there a
balance? But his finishing's not been that great this year.
But that's exactly
and he hasn't been getting to the rim as much.
His finishing this year, I think I haven't checked the numbers recently, but I think they're as bad at he's as bad at the rim now as he was last season. Which is crazy because everybody could talk about last season was the spacing was fucked. And yet this season, theoretically, the spacing is better and his finishing is, I checked today? His transition numbers. Cause I saw when I was rewatching and I saw he got the offensive foul on Collins in game one. I'm like, it feels like he's usually converts those transition opportunities. And I looked, he's in the 18th percentile
That's why I say everything's predicated on the shooting. Like, if he can't continue to be a great shooter, then he's a much more flawed player. And like, sometimes it's just that simple. Sometimes he said it after it too. I got my shots. They didn't go in. Like, you got to hit them.
Let's hope he, for my sake at least, cause I do still root for this team, that he makes this conversation look very silly over the days to come. A couple more things and I'll let you get out of here. You mentioned Taj Gibson. I don't even want to ask you a question. I want to be like, Rebecca Harlow after. Talk about Taj Gibson. Could you talk about Taj Gibson? But seriously, how great, like, everybody made fun of, like, him and Rose come in because it's Tibbs guys and the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, where would the Knicks, I feel like I'd say this about a number of guys, but seriously, where would the Knicks be without Taj Gibson? He's one of their better players. It's crazy.
I mean, he saved their ass a bunch this year. Like, this is the guy they signed off the street. He's their backup. He played, more minutes than Noel did in game one.
He was better than Noel.
Yeah. And like, he's just, I mean, whether it was the kick out to the corner off the pick and roll with Rose to set up that Burke shot, I think that gave him the lead there. Whether it was somehow like being the one guy who stopped that pick and roll by both like making
you
hard on Trae Young. Yeah.
And stealing it was a great clip.
And from stealing it on the lob to Capella with 5:53 to go in the fourth quarter, like that guy just perfectly executed it. He's played so well. He's been like just right positioning, right plays. Like, he hasn't been spectacular. You see some of the limitations on it where he's not an athletic freak like Noel or Robinson. Especially in that Trae game winner. But like, he'll give you really good minutes, and that's what you need in the playoffs.
I was saying
coming back next year. Do we get more Taj Gibson next year? Do I have to cover him next year?
He's a guy that if you could be like, there's one player on this current roster that could be with the organization for the rest of their lives. RJ probably wants in on that conversation, but Taj would be, I want Taj as a coach. I want Taj as a future GM of the Knicks. He'll be a coach. Like,
if he wants to. Yeah. He seems like he would. I think he just enjoys being in New York. Like, yeah. It was so awesome to see him being out there in his community in Brooklyn during the pandemic, helping people. He seems like a good dude to be around at all times. Like, he knows Tibbs. He speaks Tibbs. He plays, he gives good minutes. Like, I don't know what else you want from a backup center. It's an unsexy role, but like I think Gibson really is just kind of one of the unsung heroes this year. I have a question for you before we go on, and this is something I've been thinking about. What do you think of RJ Barrett game one?
It is if he made another couple of threes in the second half, I would have said it's exactly the game that I expected. Because I don't know, I feel like I have a reputation as an RJ Barrett critic, but like I've been saying it for a few weeks now. He's been bad inside the arc since for really the last month. I haven't minded the shots that he's taken that much, but at the same time, there's like a couple of looks every game where it's like, come on, man, he was weird because he went through a month where he stopped taking those. And then he had a drive where he like faded away on bogey and, you know, and I was like, you know, it went like front rim or side rim or something. I think he's had the type of game that he's kind of been having over the last month and change, except minus an extra three or two.
The one thing that surprised me was I feel like he didn't try to like, or didn't get as much to the offense as he usually does. And I get part of that maybe because Rose was out there more. And so, you know, he does a lot of creation and Burks was just feeling it. But like, I feel like he wasn't running as many pick and rolls and it just, he wasn't trying to do as many things. Maybe I'm wrong.
Do you think they're a better team when he does that the way he's been? I don't want people to come at me and be like, why are you always shitting on RJ Barrett? Because I'm not.
Yeah, him. Come at Macri, not me.
Come at Vork. Vork, you know, you get no heat. I intentionally.
I stay out of all the fires.
Look, I'm just going, not for you. For everybody listening, I'm just going by the numbers. Go look at what he shot, RJ Barrett has shot over the last month. It's not me creating things out of thin air. He's been struggling from the field. And so that's why, to me, when you say like he didn't get as much of a share of the offense, to me, that's like, okay, Tibbs is going with what he knows, which is he knows he could get Burks and Rose going anytime against this Hawks team. And then there's Randall, you know, and then after that, probably quickly. And then after that, I think Barrett's the next best option. So
the reason I was going to say is because like, you know, throughout the game, when you got one of the Hawks wings on him, I don't think that's like a necessarily a possession where he can attack, right? He doesn't have the physical advantage other than the strength. And when the defense is more, you know, someone can help me and tell me what the right geometric term is. I have dad brain.
I don't know.
When the defense is caved in like that, that doesn't play to his strengths. But like in the fourth quarter, the last 4 minutes, I think maybe all but one possession, Trae Young was being hidden on him. I'll probably write a little bit of that for Wednesday, but like, don't you got to attack? Like, see if you could put on Trae Young, see if you can get him tired and in foul trouble.
I wonder if that was a function of just Burks having it going. I don't know.
Could be. That's a good reason too.
To your Tibbs point, and for anybody listening, I know others have made this point to me on Twitter, but like that's.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's coaching adjustments, right? It's like, oh, wait a minute. They're trying to hide this guy. And look, it was a gambit that paid off because, RJ was able to bring Trey into the post successfully, I think, for a basket on one possession. On another possession, he drew a double and kicked it out, and I think Bullock missed a three. That's different. That they should exploit. I completely agree. But is that Tibbs? Is that Art? Like, I don't know.
And some of this just follow the game too, right? Like you see the shots that are open. There's only so much within anyone's control once you start a possession, right?
Yeah, no, very true. He's going to be, look, I love RJ. He's going to be fine. It's just he's 20, as many have noted. really quick, I had a thought today. I don't know what agent he's on, what number, or who it is. Somewhere, you know whose agent is smiling, because Mitchell Robinson, man, I think if he's in this series and he's healthy, I think he makes a massive difference in their pick and roll coverage, right?
Yeah. I think agent five.
I thought it was at least six, but I'll...
Might be six. Yeah. Did I miss someone while I was out on parental leave? Did something else happen? Yeah, he's got to be happy. He's got to be happy. Like, I don't know if he's, but yeah, like I do think he could be a guy who could kind of defend with his length and athleticism, defend kind of that middle ground, that purgatory that they're putting the Knicks bigs in the pick and roll, and be able to help on the perimeter and all those things. That's, you know, Nerlens Noel provides like some of that, but not all that. He's not as spry. He's not as like jumpy, quick, twitchy as Mitchell Robinson. And also, like, there's no lob threat anymore offensively. None.
That takes weird. You know, again, we've been a little critical on Tom Thibodeau here. He had their offense, as you pointed out, number one in the NBA for like over a month, and they lost a major component of it. So, you know, kudos to him for that. Okay. Last one. I referenced it. I'm not sure if we were recording yet or not, but I'll say it again. So you wrote a piece on Tuesday in which you kind of did a little bit of a big picture overview of where the franchise is at. And you touched on how there has been one common denominator for the last 20 years. And it has James Dolan, and it has led to a lot of losing. But that right now, you know, things are looking good for the lead singer of JD and the Straight Shots. He seems to be... Have you attended one of his shows yet, by the way, Fork? Or is that on your bucket list? You have not?
I've been telling my wife lately, I really want to get back and like go to a concert. Like, I miss concerts.
Do it.
Not that one.
And here I thought you had some journalistic integrity that you would go to all lengths to do the hard reporting. And now I just lost a lot of respect for you. Anyway, so things are good for JD right now, because he seems to be staying out of the Knicks affairs. And you had this great line at the end of the piece about how he was there for game one, but he was not in his customary seats, because now those seats, or that area, I guess, are filled by Leon Rose, Worldwide Wise, and Scott Perry. I know you've thought about this a lot. Let me ask you this. I'll ask it in this way. What do you think is more important right now to the Knicks going forward? Rose's relationship, and I guess by extension, Wes's relationship with Dolan, or Rose's relationship and this whole kind of like family dynamic he's built and with everybody below him, you know, with the Tibbses and the Randalls and even the Quickleys of the world? What do you think is going to be more, you know, instrumental in like whether the Knicks can continue to be successful moving forward?
I think it's working up. I think it's the relationship he has with James Dolan and trying to figure out how much time he'll get, how much patience he'll get. You know, I don't know if it's almost like a winner's curse that he has in terms of having this as year one, right? And having expectations lifted immediately. What happens if there's a drop back? What happens if next year doesn't goes well, right? Like, we don't know when next season's going to be, who they'll have, and like, what if they underperform expectations instead of vastly outplaying them? My question with whoever, and this was before they hired Leon Rose, and even then afterward, was like, how much time and patience will they get from Dolan, right? He has not given that to anyone in the past.
He gave it to Phil.
He gave him 3 years, but then he fired him 6 days after the draft.
Yes.
He was trying to do his ultimate, like, okay, we're going to turn this franchise around move by trying to trade Carmelo Anthony, maybe trade Kristaps Porzingis. And, you know, so it's either one of two things, right? Like, James Dolan was saying, look, you make all the basketball moves, I'm staying out of it. Then if he doesn't like what the basketball moves he's trying to do, then he hovers back in to fire him. Like, you can't have it both ways.
Do you think Dolan may have had an influence on Phil not trading Kristaps during that? I think it was what was it, around like the draft, where there were rumors they could get like Booker or like Tatum, or, you know, or the Tatum pick, I guess.
He was trying to get one of those guys. I don't think that those deals were out there for him, if I remember right, but like,
I don't know. If there has been any definitive reporting on that, I don't know.
Yeah. I think it seems like maybe Dolan's bigger gripe was maybe around the way, like trying to trade away Carmelo Anthony, right? Cause him and Carmelo had a pretty good relationship. If I remember the reporting at that time, and like, but that's what I mean by patience. You know, it's 3 years. That's what we're counting as patience now. It's three whole seasons, right?
Is that,
that's not even like one rookie contract.
No, I know. But is that a James Dolan? Yes, it's a James Dolan thing. But that's also, I think, to a certain extent, the way kind of sports are, like even in the NFL, where you need 5 years. Like, we see coaches and GMs get fired after three. It doesn't mean it's the right move. Let me be clear. But that's a fair point, I guess, is what I'm saying. I don't think it's exclusive to Dolan.
Yeah, maybe it's not. Maybe, but you know, like, the Knicks have tried. So they have tried twice now to do this whole, we're going to strip all the way down and we're going to build back up, ostensibly with buy-in from James Dolan, right? He's the owner. They tell, you know, any franchise, you tell your owner, you're like, listen, this is our plan for this year, the next 3 years. Are you good with it? Right. And then, you know, 3 years, Phil Jackson fired, 2.5 years of Steve Mills fired, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Glenn Grunwald literally fired after the best season that they had still in two decades.
What I want to read. I want to read the oral history behind
that. Well, I did. It wasn't, but if you remember, I wrote that McKinsey story. That was born of that. It was born of the McKinsey telling him that they had to like make the franchise more player-friendly, futuristic, and all that. So it's just, there's so many things that go into it and the decisions that he makes that I think it's how much time Leon Rose and William Wesley get from him. And they come in with great relationships with James Dolan. Like, William Wesley, I've heard, had an even better relationship with Dolan than Rose did. And so now, you know, how much time will they get? Will they have time to execute whatever their full plan is? It's probably not going to go like they want it to. Like, even if you succeed, you're gonna have to pivot at some point, right? Like, you know,
there's always a moment.
The Heat sucked for several years before they signed LeBron James. Like, it's never linear, or it's very, very rarely linear. So will he give them time to see through that? I think when you're looking like top down, Rose on down to the rest of their organization, I think some of that is kind of just, you know, I think if they didn't win this year, would the chemistry be the same? I'm not so sure. You know, like, if they keep winning, I think the chemistry will probably be good. You know, Tom Thibodeau is a good coach. He's going to have to manage some of that. You know, year three, if Tom Thibodeau in Chicago and Minnesota look different than it did in year one consistently. And I think that was a question when they hired him. I think it's still going to be a question what year three looks like, or year four if they get to there. But I think it's having the patience and having the equity with the owner to be able to do whatever it is that they want to do, especially if, you know, next year or the year after that, or free agency or the trade market or whatever, it doesn't go as they wanted to. Remember, before the Knicks missed out on Durant and Kyrie, like, Dolan went on the radio and said, we expect to have a very good free agency period, right?
Yes,
he's in the loop. They, you know, like any good front office, you talk to the guy who signs your checks and you let him know what you're doing. And you set expectations that way. And so we've seen that he has a quick trigger in the past. So what happens if it doesn't go well? Will that pre-existing relationship that they have buy them time? Or will it not? You know, Steve Mills has a great relationship with James Dolan. He's still on the board of directors for MSG Sports. He still got fired after 2.5 years.
Find out the answer next time. God.
Sorry, that was a very, you transitioned that. That was a very somber way of answering.
I'm
talking about game two, Pop.
But this is why I wanted to talk about it, because I know you're going to give me an honest response. And that's, look, you're right. Evidence matters, and we have a lot of evidence of some impatience. So we Knicks fans like myself hope.
Look at the Rangers, by the way. Look at the Rangers.
I didn't bring them up for very specific reason, because again, I'm just kind of hoping that that's a Ranger thing. Not my problem. Although I guess it is my problem, because it is the same owner. Anyway.
We got winning game two. Oh, what's your analysis? What's going to happen in game two?
I think I picked the Knicks to win 116 to 110, I think was my final score prediction. Yeah. Do you want to make a prediction?
I think it'll come down to the final 30 seconds again. I don't know who's going to win it. Okay. But I wouldn't be surprised if we see the ball in Trae Young's hands again with the game on the line, or Julius Randle's hands and the game on the line. I think there's just two very evenly matched teams.
Yeah. No, they are.
So it wouldn't be a surprise if they come down to the final minute over and over.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with you. But hey, listen, whatever happens, everything's going to be fine because we won two coin flips. But I guess the second one, how do they do that? I guess. Do you think they did it like a computer generation or something? I wonder.
I think they literally flip a coin, don't they?
Yeah, but I'm sure there's an easy way to do a three-way coin flip situation, but like.
Oh, the three-way coin flip.
That's exactly, yeah.
I would guess you flip the coin twice, right? First coin flip. Loser gets 23, winner gets 22. It's like the play-in tournament.
Yeah, but
but flipping coins.
but who gets to decide? Like, should it be between 21 and 22 first, or 22 to whatever?
That's the way that I would flip the coins. You flip one coin, loser gets 23, winner gets 22, and then it's.
They should put you in charge of this next season, I think, or at least let you cover it. That'd be a fun thing to cover, right? Like inside the coin flip room of the
I was hyped. Are they doing the lottery again this year?
You've never been in the drawing room, right?
You have. I was in 2019, the RJ draft, 2018, the Zion draft. Is that 19 18? I don't know, one of those years.
Wasn't Bondi in there for that one?
He was there too.
That was the holy who was it, the coach of the
Gentry
cursed, right?
He just started cursing, screaming. It was great. The most awkward thing is when, so they do the lottery drawing, right?
Yeah.
And everyone's just nervous as all hell, understandably, right? Because literally this could be the reason you get fired or not next year. Although for Alvin Gentry, he was still fired the next year, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But like everyone's extremely nervous and you do the lottery. And then, you know, after that, someone's really happy. Someone's not happy. Someone drops to like eighth when they should have been third and they're just pissed and steaming. But then you have to relive it because they're keeping you in there until ESPN broadcasts the results of the lottery. So you watch them watch the lottery play out all over again. So like, I think Allen Houston was in there for the Knicks. He's just like withdrawn. He already knows how this goes. He's like unhappy. Guys are like not watching. Like some guys are just watching all over again. They're laughing at what like the broadcasters are saying. So like almost watching them watch the lottery drawing is more interesting sometimes than the thing itself.
That's hysterical. I remember I left that, we were at the bar that night and I left being like, okay, I'm feeling good. I just wanted to get in the top three. They got in the top three.
They're not all right. Do you take RJ Barrett or John Morant? You do it now.
I knew you were going to ask me that fucking question.
I'm sure I'm the first to ask you that question.
It came up. No, we had like a whole 10 minute discussion on locker room on Saturday about this. I think, let me say this. I think the Knicks are happy with the guy they have. I think it's the right guy for the Knicks. I think his composition and the whole thing is very good for this franchise, for the city. I do still think John Morant has a higher ceiling as a player. I don't know how you deny that. That said, I now do believe there is a world where RJ Barrett is a top 15 NBA player, maybe for only a year or two. But if the playmaking and the finishing could keep coming around, the shooting and the defense, I think there is a path for him to get to Jimmy Butler. Butler dumb. That's a new word that I've just invented.
You know, I'm kind of reassessing too. So I did the story on the Knicks shooting threes all of a sudden.
It was just great. Yeah.
Thank you. And one of the things that was interesting was, talked to Drew Hanlon for it. And because I wanted to know, like, how did RJ fix a shot? And he's just like, yeah, you know, I told him, like, if you shoot 33 this season, 33% from three, like, that's a good step forward. If you hit 35, like, basically, like, you know, that's amazing. Like, we did it. We did everything we went to. And they hit 40%. And, like, even the guys.
By one three.
And when I talked to him, he was at like 39.9, and Drew Hanlon was like, he's one made three away from 40%, and he got over it. But like, that just tells you, like, sometimes it's just hard to figure out what expectations are, even if you're like working directly with the guy, right? Like, he told me, he's like, you hit 35%, you know, like, that's a great year. Like, you just, you know, you made this huge leap, and there he went and he hit 40%. And so, like, trying to figure out how all of these guys will improve is really hard. It doesn't matter if you're the player or the coach yourself. Like, And so I could see it. I could see being like a top 20 guy, something like that. I still have some questions. I think the athleticism is a thing that, I don't know, like everyone compares him to Jimmy Butler. But like if you go back, and I did, you go back at Jimmy Butler's athletic testing numbers when he was coming into the draft.
They're pretty good.
But if you can get his defense there, and if you can get the 3-point shooting stays at like 39%, something like that, and he's able to do it off the dribble a little bit, why not? Like, I can see that happening for sure.
And it's a good conversation for another pod, but like small guards that have been, again, this is a high standard, but like been the best player on a championship team. It's still Steph Curry, unless you go back to Isaiah Thomas. And I don't think anybody's, and this was my ultimate point when I talked about this the other day, I don't think anyone's banking on John Morant becoming, the greatest shooter of all time. Although
he's not a good 3-point shooter either.
He's a terrible three. I mean, I know he hit whatever he hit in the play-in game, but like,
sure.
If me and you had 12 feet of space and
he takes different threes. Like a lot of RJs are off the catch now. This season, I think that helps him
for sure.
Off the dribble and like, but yeah, I think it's interesting, and I think it got a lot more interesting this year than it was after this rookie year.
Yeah, it'll be fun to track. All right, the last thing I'm gonna ask you, could you tell the folks at home where they could find you and the hat that you're wearing right now for anybody who's watching on YouTube?
I lost my Chelsea hat. I don't know where my Chelsea hat is, so it's
I forgot
it's the only hat I have left.
Forgot you're a Chelsea fan.
Yeah, you can find me on the tweets. I don't ever recommend anyone to go on Twitter, so totally disregard that. I write for The Athletic. You can subscribe to The Athletic. Get all of our Knicks coverage. Get all of our NBA coverage. Get all of our Chelsea and EPL coverage. We cover a lot of teams. Subscribe to The Athletic despite me. That's what I say. that's all I got.
I'm going to catch it from... wait a minute. Was he on? No, I don't think he was on. I'm going to catch shit from some segments of Knicks Twitter. But you know what I've been enjoying a lot, even though he needles the Knicks and it gets under my effing skin, and you've done pieces with him, I enjoy Hollinger's weekly pieces.
He's really smart.
He's really
smart. I know he takes a lot of cheap shots at the Knicks.
It hurts. If you talk to Hollinger, be like, there is a crazy Knick podcaster out there who just wants you to know you hurt him when you talk about them. That's all. But they're good. He's good.
I'll tell him. I think I got someone to subscribe on Reddit by, he said, I'll subscribe if you tell Trey Kirby to stop making fun of the Knicks and say the Knicks are back. And I followed up and Trey Kirby's like, the Knicks are back. And so I'll do it. But he's really smart. Like I learn something every time I read him because he's kind of got an understanding of both the cap and the rules and nuances of the game and the way it's played that I think is really, really interesting. And I'm not just saying that because he's a teammate of mine. Like, we just have a lot of really fucking smart people that I read, and I'm like, oh damn, I'm really out of place.
I was perfect segue. I was about to say, you're not so bad yourself, Vork. If you're listening to this, I say this every time you're on. If you're listening to this and you're not reading Mike Vorkunov on The Athletic, what are you doing with yourself? You need to change that. You could get some kind of a stupid deal because you guys always run stupid deals.
I think we still have, I don't know if we'll have it by the time this runs, but we had like $1.
Oh, the time is
month thing.
Time is running.
I don't know. Time's running out. Literally, I don't know if we'll have a $5 foot long deal or something going on, but
there you go.
Yeah, sign up. It's a lot of really good stuff there, I think.
It is. Okay. And on that note, everybody out there, thank you for listening to another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. We'll be back with you in another episode, hopefully after the Knicks win a game, and we will talk to you then.